Cool. Yeah. So we're going to talk about race day planning a little bit tonight. Hopefully you guys will be able to use some of this information in your upcoming events. I know a lot of you guys are thinking about your goals for 2021, and some of you even have races coming up in the next 8 to 12 weeks. So hopefully this stuff will be timely for you. Yeah,
I think it's also, you know, I guess the disclaimer, this was something I was thinking on as we were kind of talking about what we wanted to talk about, but there's no, on a lot of things, there's no like right and wrong way, right? Like the way TJ and I race is very, very different because we're different people and different athletes. For instance, the way that he plans his race, like even when we do the exact same race, I like wearing a vest so that I don't have to go to aid stations because I don't like messing around with aid stations. TJ doesn't like wearing a vest, so he makes sure to take full advantage of aid stations. And I think that just, you know, shows that like the big thing about racing, it's kind of like, I don't know, like when you're in high school, they tell you to just take like the ACT or the SAT like as many times as you can to just get better at it. And that's kind of how racing, I think, particularly at longer distances, is. Not to say you should do the maximum amount of races in a particular season, but the more you do it, the better you get at racing, right? Like the more comfortable you get at, you know, like really running your own game, controlling your strategy, and figuring out when and how to use these different kind of resources.
Yeah, great. So let's talk about just making sure that we, I don't know, set ourselves up for success leading into a race and then executing the race. And then we can kind of get into the other aspects of this. My biggest thing for athletes when they are getting ready for an A race, and we've talked about A, B, and C races on past calls, so we won't spend a lot of time on that today, but in an A race, so a race that you are spending, you know, 8 to 16 weeks training very specifically on, can be any distance, but it's one of your main events for the season. You probably do one, two of those in a year. A big thing that I have for athletes who are running on the trails is that you're spending the majority of your weekend mileage, long runs, and even some workouts on very similar terrain to that you're going to be experiencing on race day. This is going to give yourself a chance to adapt and be able to anticipate any kind of challenges that might come from being on in that terrain. Very specifically, you know, if the terrain is really technical, you're going to want to spend time running on technical terrain. If the terrain is really, really hilly, you're going to want to spend time on hilly terrain because there's a huge neuromuscular component to running up and down hills and in technical terrain that you don't want to miss in your training process. And the kind of appropriate amount of time to spend on that would be one or two runs a week for most athletes.
But also don't panic if that's not realistic. I know a lot of people, like if you live in Iowa and you're running Leadville, your opportunities to go run in Leadville on every other weekend are, that's like not a reality for you. So do what you can, right? Like, and you can do that on the front end by picking races that facilitate good, like that you can train for realistically, and by, you know, like just, you know, picking similar terrain, even if it's not exactly the same. And if, like, for instance, you live in New York City, but you're training for mountain races, you know, just do your best, cut yourself slack, and don't freak out about the specifics, right? Because just making life harder on yourself is not going to make you more prepared for any race.
If you don't have access to the terrain you're racing on, I would definitely think about reaching out to a strength coach. Emily is on our call today. She is our strength partner, Microcosm, and she can help you guys kind of work through some of these things. If you don't have access to that terrain, it's important that you don't forget about the fact that you need to make those neuromuscular adaptations. You need to train your body and be prepared for the eccentric muscle contractions that accompany steep downhilling and things like that. That's why we can also do strength work on the other side of this stuff So yeah, Emily is an amazing resource. She's tuned in here and her information is on our website. And I would recommend that you guys check it out, Little Summits Training. So basically, you know, in the past, we've done a lot of mountain legs and things like that. There are ways to take that several levels beyond. I mean, that is just like your basic stuff. And so if you really want to be prepared for these things, it's important to also think about those other aspects of training that are going to help you not only stay strong, but also perform well on race day. And we have had success with athletes who live in like New York City running, you know, really steep or technical mountain races. And that's because they do take the sport work really, really seriously.
I have an athlete that lives and trains in Bangkok, and which is a city. Mm-hmm. And he runs like super long trail races, and he prepares for a lot of that by doing parking garage hills and doing a lot of tread hills. So don't undervalue the use of a treadmill. Actually, I think, you know, legend has it Trevor Fuchs, before he won the Hurt 100, he did all of his training on the treadmill. So you can get really great training from devices like the treadmill, or from, you know, doing stadium stairs and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. The next thing that I think is really important beyond, you know, spending time on similar terrain and or supplementing that with strength work or both, is also, you know, spending some time visualizing and anticipating any challenges that you think you're going to kind of be confronted with out there during the race. I know we talk a lot about visualization and preparing, but you know, this doesn't have to be a mental exercise. You can also spend time writing this stuff down and then kind of writing down a game plan for how you'd respond. I think this becomes really important in longer races, especially when the fatigue state starts to cloud your ability to think critically and make game time decisions. The more tired you are, the harder it is to think on your feet. So if you're trying to deal with stuff like blisters, if you're trying to deal with a bad stomach, things like that, it's hard to work through and problem solve when you're tired. Have a game plan before you head out there. Maybe have visualized the steps you're going to take to work through those situations. Write them down so you have them like ingrained in your mind. When I think about trying to commit things to memory, I think about the process of writing those things down. That's very helpful for me. Might be helpful for you guys as well. So I don't know if you had any thoughts on that, since you're kind of
races. Literally anytime I'm I even do this like when I'm on the stationary bike, but like anytime I'm running up a hill or I'm going up a hill, in my dark, cold garage, I envision myself running the Leadville 100, going up the power line climb for the second time and actually being strong. So when I actually do get to do that, I'll have practiced it in my head at least a million times. And I think that that's really important too. I don't anticipate actually feeling as strong as I might like at that point at mile 80 something. But I think that, you know, envisioning yourself covering specific terrain can be a really, really powerful tool, and it at least keeps you motivated in the dark garage. So that's something too.
It's awesome. Definitely. The other component to kind of owning your race, especially C, B, A race, D race, I don't know who's doing a D race, but any race that you're doing, you've got to know where your aid stations are. You have to know the elevation profile. You have to know the course. So if that's just reading the description a couple times to get familiar with it, if you don't have these things covered, you make a wrong turn during the race, everything goes to heck. You know, you've got to be able to
recover. Also, don't DNF because you got lost.
Right. Okay.
Still finish. I think that that's important because I know we've both gotten lost during races before. I've come back to win races where I've gotten lost. I've lost podium spots on races where I've gotten lost, but I think it was a really important mental exercise for, like, there was at one point I was leading a marathon. I took a wrong turn. I ended up in fourth place. I'm really proud of myself for finishing, even though the result wasn't what I wanted, because it's always better to finish what you start than it is to just be like, oh, well, I'm not going to get the result I want, so I might as well like not finish. Finishing is always great.
Yeah, we've certainly seen people their entire race be derailed by going off course.
And it happens. It happens to everyone.
It does, of course. So that's why we have to study the course map. We've got to know where the aid stations are so we can anticipate, you know, just where we are in terms of like our where we are on the course. You know, if we haven't gotten to that aid station yet and you're wondering if you're lost, but you don't know where the aid stations are, the mileage between them, it's going to be a lot harder for you to course correct while you're out there. So I would really recommend that you guys spend some time looking at those things before your race. Yeah, I had an athlete not long ago go and start a 50K and they hadn't even looked at the elevation profile. And so they didn't know that they were going to be running 5,000 feet of climbing. And I have to say, it's not your coach's job to know that. If you put the goals on your schedule, you better know what they are. You better take the time to figure that out and don't wait till you're 2 hours into your race to know that you have to do 5,000 feet of climbing. That's just ridiculous.
It's a long day.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, gosh. Okay.
Just to speak to Emily's question, Emily asked, what do you guys think about visualizing the worst parts of your race, imagining the low moments, etc.? Anyone that's ever raced with us actually has gotten, I know that our pre-race emails are slightly different, but I also know that one way they're the same is we ask athletes to think about how they will respond. Like, we tell people not to imagine the perfect day. We tell them to imagine the worst day possible and then to work through that in your head, right? Because very few of us have ever executed the perfect race, but I think we've all had to work through like, okay, the good old puke and rally, or like getting lost and then getting it back together, having to switch shoes, like having to switch pants, like stuff happens out there, you know? So don't visualize the perfect race, visualize getting lost, throwing up on your shoes, needing clean pants, and what you're gonna do to work through every scenario.
I think you can take that a step beyond as well, Emily. So like when you're doing your workouts, and you are kind of you're in uncomfortable situations in your training, those moments offer you an opportunity to also then visualize kind of a correlating moment that may occur in your race. And that gives you a moment to try to work through that in a more tangible way. I know for me, if I'm going through a visualization process, maybe through meditation or just kind of a moment sitting, and spending time in my own head, I can't always come up with the exact sensations that may occur in those worst, you know, moments, in those tough times. I get pretty close because I've spent a lot of time doing this, but sometimes it's very easy to do the visualization process when you're feeling those same or very similar acute sensations in real time. So a thing that one of our athletes actually suggested to me long ago, who is a sports psychologist, he recommended that when you're doing your workout, as your workout's progressing, start to try to feel bad. Start to try to manifest those feelings and use that as an opportunity to respond correctly. That is something that I do. I don't necessarily think that everyone should do that because workouts in general kind of don't always feel very good, right? Because we're supposed to be pushing and getting better, not proving ourselves in the workouts. So the workouts, they sometimes suck.
But I mean, embracing discomfort is something that if you're not embracing discomfort on your workouts, I definitely would say you have room to lean into discomfort a bit more. And like, it's, you know, while you don't want to be pushing as hard in a workout as you do in a race, in the same way that you can embrace and lean into discomfort, that's the same thing in race, right? Like, I think what getting uncomfortable involves is like basically asking yourself a question, like, am I willing to go further into this, right? And giving up is when you say to yourself, I am unwilling to go further into this. What enduring is, what embracing discomfort is saying is like, let's see what's on the other side.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Because as of yet, we have not killed someone with a workout. So you know, lean into that discomfort a bit and you probably won't die. Get curious about what you're feeling, particularly during races. You're capable than a lot more of what you think you are. And you can practice pushing that discomfort just a bit in workouts and then really take it as far as possible on race day. Yeah.
I would actually go as far as to say that in workouts, you can try to take it a few steps farther, because the if you mess up a workout, you often have another chance, another run to recover and to kind of learn from the experience and apply.
We still want people going to the well on every workout.
No, but going to the well, I think we should be clear here. Trying to manifest some of the challenging sensations that happen in a race is not the same as going to the well. Hmm. This is just more of that getting, you know, manifesting that feeling of being very uncomfortable and then making peace with it and then working through it, using the positive self-talk, using the tools that you're learning here on the next interval and the next interval to make the workout more successful and to use those as opportunities that you can then draw from when you get to your race. We don't want you guys going to destroy yourself or go to the well in any workouts. In fact, try not to do that on 99.9% of all your runs, because if you go to the well too often, it's going to make it really, really hard to want to continue to train.
You'll basically just dig a shallow well.
Yeah. So, okay. So make sure, I think we're pretty clear on that. Yeah. The other things that I think are really important when it comes down to like executing on race day, and everybody's like asked this, a lot of athletes ask us like, how do I pace for my race? What is pacing for my race? What pace should I run?
Easy.
Yeah.
Just run easy. Most, well, okay.
this always yields the most like unsatisfactory response. This is
like, this is like the most, this is my least favorite question to get asked. Like I would literally, someone asked me like boxers or briefs, cause I would have like a better answer for that than like, I don't know how fast you should run your 100K. Like I'm not there.
Right.
Don't run it that fast. Yeah, it's 100K.
My rule is for long races, start easy, start twice as easy as easy.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that the pace that you start at is at least, you know, I think about it in terms of your forever effort. It's the effort that you feel like you can carry on for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. Technically, that's pretty much your easy pace. But because your easy pace comprises 74% of your actual aerobic capacity, you have quite a huge range. So it's closer to recovery. It's that pace that you feel like you can carry on for an entire day if you want. When I go and do my easy runs, I'm always thinking about how to contextualize that in terms of race performance. Mm-hmm. And usually when I go run easy, I'm thinking about, man, this is my 100-mile effort. This is my 100K effort. It's so easy. I'm not tired when I finish the run. You know, that's the kind of pace you want to start your race at. And when you look at these things realistically, if you're starting easy enough, you should hopefully be able to maintain that effort for a while. And if you feel really great at halfway, then you can push a little harder. I think, you know, if you're going to run a shorter race, 50K, marathon or less, starting faster tends to be optimal for having the performance that you want. Yet, you still should start a little easier and try to finish stronger. We don't want to
finish on your last legs. I wouldn't classify 50K as shorter.
In terms of 100 miles, it's
shorter than 100 miles. But
and we have a lot more athletes running 100, at least I do, running 100 than running 50. Mm.
I do not.
I would love to hear Drew or Kristen, if you guys kind of have any comments or suggestions about pacing, because I know you guys are also like super experienced coaches and also athletes racing.
Yeah, I'll jump in real quick if you don't mind. I've come to find that when it comes to pacing, you don't just come race day have made up a pace that you're going to go run. The idea is that over the course of your training, you will identify not just what race pace is, but I guess that starting pace, that middle of the road pace, that really red line pace, depending on the distance that you're racing. But it could be 5K to 100 mile, or it doesn't matter. You will never show up on a race day and be like, I have no clue how fast I should run this. You know, you're there. And so, I mean, really nothing should come as a surprise as it pertains to pace. That's what you're practicing this whole time.
I totally agree with that. And I will say that with that being said, though, I know you guys have been talking about going out conservatively or like extra conservatively. One thing that I always think of that makes me laugh every race that I do is my college cross country and track coach at the University of Oregon used to tell us that he'd say, those who lead lose. And he was right every time, whether it was a 5K on the track or an 8K on the cross country course. And, you know, just taking those words into consideration would always make me hold back quite a bit at the beginning of any race, even now, years later, where I will try to talk to the people around me and encourage the people around me for at least the first mile. And then, you know, like, and it could be up to like 3 miles. It depends on how far the race is, but you know, just like, hey, how are you feeling? This is so cool. Like, wow, look at the scenery. It's beautiful. Aren't we lucky to be here? Things like that. Just making sure that it's very selfish and probably very disingenuous, but I am like excited to talk to the people that I'm racing with. And so it's really fun to just like chit chat. Hey, where are you from? You know, what is your training like, type of thing? And then, you know, when you really start to feel warmed up, you can quiet down and start to focus.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important illustration of how critical it is to run your own race. Right. I think that so many people get goaded into, maybe just like going out too fast or even too slow, right? Like you should not be looking to the people around you for cues as to how hard you should be running. That is fully up to you, and allowing other people to dictate that for you, whether it's on the slow end or the fast end, is the wrong decision to make.
Yeah, I would agree. I like Kristen and Drew, you guys, those kind of comments were spot on. Another thing that I kind of use to help indicate what my overall effort or pace will be on race day is my long run experiences in the training block leading up to that. So it's really important to take some, you know, notes, look back at your training log, make sure you're kind of looking like, okay, I ran this terrain, similar terrain for 20 miles at this pace, this many weekends in a row. You know, if I'm really trying to push my potential, and those are kind of easy or easy moderate efforts for long runs, I could probably push that a little bit more if I wanted to, because on race day, I'm going to be a lot fresher. I'm going to have tapered for 1 and 2 weeks. So my bandwidth to go faster is going to be there. And so I can up my level just a little bit. And then hopefully, you know, after that first hour, I can push it incrementally harder as the race goes on. So, you know, those cumulative efforts are a really important piece to deciding how fast you're going to go out there. That's a huge reason why, like, we don't love athletes to like race unprompted or before, you know, a good training block to kind of help lead up to these events, because those experiences will help you understand how fast you should go, what's sustainable and what's not. You know, I love having a run where I've gone a little too hard on a long run that really like helps me stay honest. Like, wow, okay, that's not going to be race pace at a marathon or 50K for me. Like, I've got to really dial it down. Yeah. And sometimes doing tempo workouts and things like that will also help you to kind of cue into your total bandwidth, what you have available aerobically. Anyways, yeah, a lot of that comes from experience. I love the conservative start. I tend to, especially in longer races, ask athletes to think about really dialing back, especially for that first hour. And trying to envision an effort level that you'd be like really proud of finishing a race at, and knowing like, okay, realistically, can I do that? You know, if it's 100 miles, I'm probably gonna be walking a lot towards the end of the race. So like, maybe I should start really, really, really slow at the beginning to ensure that I'm running more at the end, those kind of things. The other big thing, I think, and to wrap up kind of like the race day side of things.
Is to say, don't ask your coach to plan your race for you or to like tell you what pace to run at.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Thank you, Zoe. I think own your training. But I wanted to make a point about routine, actually. A lot of athletes ask, should I do things differently on race week? Should I try new things? Should I change my habits? Should I drink beers or not drink beers? Should I have coffee or not have coffee? What about my supplements? All of these things. I generally tell athletes not to drastically change their routine at all. You can emphasize a little bit more rest in R&R. I think that that's always important. But if you're a coffee drinker, drink coffee before your race, drink coffee during the week. If you drink a beer every now and again, keep your habits pretty much the same. If you change your habits, that's kind of when your body can react in strange ways and it might throw you off on race day. As always, we're huge proponents of sleeping well. So whether you're training or racing or whatever, always be focused on good sleep.
And don't freak out if you have a bad night of sleep before a race. Everyone has terrible nights of sleep before races and you'll be fine. Yeah. It's not ideal, but you'll be fine. Don't panic. Don't make it worse than it's, yeah, just don't make things worse on yourself.
So yeah, I think kind of the next part of this call is a super important topic. When to utilize crew.
Use crew.
Yeah, use crew.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do we use them for long races or short races?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I would say like, use crew as much as your crew will let you use them, right? Like if you've got a partner who is not racing with you and is able to get their long run done, then like rope that sucker in, you know, like use people if they're around with their consent and in a way that like respects their autonomy. But, you know, I think, and also COVID, it's a delicate balance, but I think we're both huge fans of using crew when possible. Cause once again, TJ doesn't love wearing a vest. So for longer races, it's really great for him to be able to swap out handhelds. I'm pretty picky about like the food that I like sometimes. And it's nice to not have to carry all of your food. So it's nice to be able to pick those things up. And using a crew can be a lot more efficient than going through an aid station and like having to sort through the like Oreo M&M smorgasbord to like find what works for you. Like when we use crew, like when I'm crewing TJ, if I have a table, I set up a table and I lay everything out so he can just come in and grab stuff. And I know exactly where to, if he is using a vest, I know exactly where to stick stuff in his vest. I'll pull bottles out, put bottles in. He is out. It is a NASCAR pit crew. We are not chit-chatting. I do not ask him how he feels. I tell him he looks good and I tell him to get the heck out of there. You know, like it's not like a fun, like romantic couples moment for us. It's like very fast and very efficient. And it's a big opportunity. I'll tell him like, you look good. You look exactly like you're right where you need to be. Make sure you're eating. And I always remind him to really stay up on his eating and try to like take the trash explosion that pops out of his vest and pockets out as well, because take care of your trash. I think that's a really important part. Like as someone that, I mean, we both have crewed for each other quite frequently, but I think, you know, the big things are just like, I know what he likes. I know, you know, I've talked him out of DNFing before. He's talked me out of DNFing temporarily. And yeah, I think, you know, just knowing how to psych the other person up. I would love to know what you think about like both having been a crew member and having me crewed for you. What parts of that you think are most beneficial and people can learn from?
Yeah, I think the crew is great if you want to streamline your race experience. If you're looking to set a PR or be competitive at an event or make things easier on yourself, whether you're chasing cutoffs or, you know, just trying to finish a race that's really challenging, enlisting a friend or a couple friends to be out there and support you can be really great for motivation, can really lift you up if you're having a tough time. And it can also help to take some of like the mental strains of race day off of you. For example, like what Zoe mentioned, having to figure out like what foods are working for you and whatever at an aid station. Well, you know, I'm going to just take away those kind of choices and have somebody be there for me to just give me some food, and then I'll be on my way and I'll stay focused on working towards the goals I have for that event. I think like streamlining things that way works really well. It's also super helpful from the mental and emotional standpoint. If you're having a tough moment, having a loved one there, somebody who, if you get upset with them, they won't, you know, judge you or hold that, you know, remember that later. They'll be like, okay, this is a race moment. These things happen. You know, that's really important. But having somebody there who can help motivate you. And I think this kind of extends into like who do we pick to be on our crew? You know, like, especially in longer races, you know, for a race that's a few hours long, like a marathon trail race or a marathon road race, or if you're thinking about doing a 50K, something that's going to take, you know, you're going to finish, start in the light and finish in the light. I think, you know, one person can do the job. I'll have Zoe or Kristen's crew for me or whoever, you know, like, I'll have somebody there who can, you know, pass me my water bottle and my food and let me just be, you know, go on my way. But when we're thinking about things in terms of like 24 hours of crewing, 36 hours of crewing, like a really long 100 or 2 days or even more, we have athletes that ran.
God bless anyone crewing the Moab 200.
Yeah. I mean, we had athletes run the Moab 240 and that required multiple days of crewing.
Like a week, like the better part of a week.
So picking those people who are up for the task, who are going to be, I think, you know, relatively calm under pressure and kind of have a centered kind of mindset and mentality. At least for me, those are the kind of people I'm going to pick. Supportive, loving individuals for the moments when things get tough, and knowledgeable people. Individuals who are like a little bit familiar with trail running is also really important. And people that you can trust to give you good advice, or to, you know, give you a shoulder rub, whatever it is when you sit down at mile 80 and you're exhausted and you still have 20 more miles to go, who can help lift you up and get you moving.
I think it's really important to have super vulnerable and honest conversations with your crew about what your goals are and how they're gonna help you get there, right? Like, I think something that people can underestimate is what DNF brain is like and what race brain is like, and having a very honest conversation with your crew, like, hey, I might try to talk myself out of finishing this. I don't actually not want to finish this. Here's how you're going to convince me to keep going, barring like health risks, you know, and like have a conversation with them and prepare them for those incidences, right? Because I think a lot of us have probably even been in the, you know, place where like we've been supporting a friend who's going through something and they're not doing great and they want to quit. And you're like, oh my God, should I let them quit? Should I not? And I think the default should be, as long as their long-term health is not at risk, you keep that person moving, whatever it takes, keep them moving if their long-term health is not at risk.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, you know, kind of part of having that conversation is setting your crew up for success, having a race plan to give your crew members that states where you're going to be at approximately what time and very concisely tells them what to ask you, what to give you, what kind of conversation to have with you at that time. It gives you, the athlete, a moment to try to anticipate what you might be going through at those stages of the race. It helps you to start to understand, like, and think about your pacing for that event. And ultimately it's going to take a lot of guesswork out of the process. So that way you get what you need and you get on your way. Something that I've noticed, that when I crew for Zoe, is she'll make a spreadsheet for me with the aid stations where I need to be at, the time she anticipates me being there. And then she like does like a label, like bag A, and says what's in bag A. And then like what to ask me, and I'll have,
I literally write out a script for him, right? Like, I'll tell him, do not tell me what position I'm in at this point. Like, do not tell me what place I'm in. Do not tell me anything. Just tell me I look strong and tell me to keep eating. And then like after the halfway point, I'll have him tell me, okay, you've now reached the halfway point. Now is time to drop the hammer. This is where the race starts. And then, you know, next time I see him, he'll say, okay, you know, you're three quarters of the way there. Now it's really time to get aggressive and make some moves. Like have him help kind of cue, you know, like have him be past me, encouraging future me during the race when my brain is no longer able to generate those messages on its own. And I think that's really, really important for you to like kind of control the script of your race and use the people at your disposal to do that.
Yeah. And as a crew member, you know, you can use that kind of race plan that the athlete gives you to help try to anticipate some of the athlete's needs. you know, to have some options if they need them for when they arrive at the destination, which you're going to meet them, and to know what are the right questions to ask. I would love to throw this back to Kristen and Drew for a moment, because you guys have both crewed the Leadville 100 for Zoe, and I'm sure you learned.
Wow, didn't we all learn so much?
A ton at that event. And oh man, you guys were both pacers too. And that was a heck of a day. What do you guys think, kind of like, what are a couple defining characteristics of like a good crew member?
Okay, here's the thing, is I think that a lot of us, we didn't know each other, right? Drew and I didn't know each other before that day. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, no new friends, or oh, I don't want to deal with someone I don't know, or, you know, like, whatever. And that's just not the right mindset to go into something this big should be. I think that you should be open-minded. You should be adaptable. You should be ready to have a ton of fun, because it is so much fun. It's fun to hang out all day. It's fun to watch your runner come through smiling, you know, taking selfies at mile 50 or whatever. You know, like, we had such a good time. But I also think that it's super important, when Drew was coming down through the 75 mile aid station with Zoe, he was like, hey, you know, Zoe's going to the bathroom a lot. Does anybody know? Does anybody know what this could be? She's overhydrated. And none of us really knew, you know? And so when I picked her up at mile 75 and we were going up power line, Zoe, I hope I'm there when we're going up power line the second time. And
you're like, I visualize it. You have to, like, it's part of part of the visuals now. We can't mess with it.
But I think that
the race plan was dialed. It was just the execution that was suboptimal. Yeah.
But I think for me personally, I want to be more up to speed and knowledgeable about what to do when things go wrong, and having a legitimate backup plan instead of thinking like, oh, my runner's not, there's nothing bad's going to happen to my runner, you know, because you just don't know. And I think that being prepared, maybe take a wilderness first aid course. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, just we were both hypothermic at the end of that. And I think we were both well aware that we were hypothermic at the end of that. And if I had to go back and do that over again, I would carry extra layers.
Emergency blanket.
Base blanket. Yeah. But I think overall, going into a big event as a crew member, having an open mind and just being ready for anything, but, you know, most importantly, like, you're there to support your runner, and whatever they need, that's why they asked you to be there. So it's really important to be focused, to stay on top of things. And even though the day, you know, gets long and they're running for 30 hours or whatever it may be, you still have to pay attention. Like, you still have to keep tabs on your runner. You have to keep tabs on yourself as well, especially if you're pacing, because you don't want to be pacing your runner and then bonk yourself, you know, and be like, oh, go on, like, I can't keep up type of thing, because that's not helpful. So I think just doing whatever you can to stay positive, stay open-minded, and make it fun, because that's what we're there to do, you know. It's so much fun, so just really lean into that.
Yeah, that's great. Right.
And if I could, TJ, real quick, I just want to piggyback on what Kristen said. Two very important things to me are, not just everyone in a crew knows their runner. That's right. That's easy. That's why they're there. But it is important, like Kristen said, to get to know the other people who are pacing with you, because they're going to come to, like, you're working as a team to get your person over a line. And so it's just so important for you to know who they are, what they're like, to maybe spend a couple days with each other, like, beforehand, or communicate if you're able to beforehand, to kind of understand where people's strengths and weaknesses are, so you can better serve your runner. The other thing, again, Kristen said it perfect, but I just want to really double down on, is just like we were discussing at the beginning of this, as it pertains to racing and pacing and that kind of thing, the more that you guys can plan ahead of time and visualize to try to mitigate race day dilemmas is so important. And that's not just the runner, that could be your pacers too, making sure that you show up at the right time, at the right place to give your runner their nutrition or whatever they need. Just everything, every scenario is so important to go over. I just can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very well said. I think that you guys just really spelled it out for me. That's exactly what
you're hired.
I had in my mind. That's why you guys are coaches, because you know what you're talking about.
See you in Leadville.
Yeah, and kind of, we kind of got into the pacer thing, which is kind of the last point that we wanted to make. I'll make a really quick, just a really quick thing on drop bags. If you aren't able to utilize crew, another great thing to do is to do all of these things, but to do it with drop bags. So anticipate your needs at various points in the race and to utilize a drop bag that has those things in there, whether it's, you know, blister repair kit, an extra pair of shoes with dry socks. If you're going into a long night of running and you're going to be wet and cold all day, extra dry layers, anticipating the conditions and the course and things like that. You know, when I haven't had opportunity to use crew, as somebody who doesn't like to carry anything at all and is really like kind of annoyingly weight conscious about how much I have to carry and too obsessed with going fast, I will use a drop bag to just literally not have to use a vest and to carry stuff. Mm-hmm. You guys can do that too, maybe in a healthier way than I do it. But
yeah, I think, you know, just use it, like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to go fast, and there's nothing wrong with, like, I mean, whatever pace you're running is great, right? But like, use the tools at your disposal, but don't get bogged down, right? Like, the things we want to avoid are like chilling at aid stations, putzing around in your drop bag, being like, oh, maybe I'll do like a total wardrobe change a la Cher in the middle of this 50K. Like, it's not really necessary. Like, you should be so in control that you don't, you know, have to always bust out every tool in the tool set. You know, I think when possible, like, change shoes if you have to, but don't do it just for funsies. Like, try to really keep momentum going. Learn to eat while you run. Learn to change clothes while you run. It is a skill, and you can do it if I can do it, because I am very not coordinated. But like, if you have to like stop to like put your jacket on over your vest if you can, and then like try to figure out if you can take it off, but like, you know, figure out how to keep moving no matter what you have to do during a race. Like, there have been times when TJ has crewed me and he'll meet me outside of aid stations, walk with me through the aid station, and I never stop moving to receive aid.
Yeah.
And I think that like that momentum, particularly in longer races, is really important, because stopping does not feel great.
Yeah. Personally, what I like is if I'm in a longer race and I have to use a vest, I'm fortunate. I have a couple of vests. I will preload a vest. Zoe will literally hand me the vest loaded up. I will drop the other vest on the ground and I will keep moving forward. And then she'll load that vest up for the next aid station. And like, the same process will, you know, unfold, you know, each step of the way towards the finish line.
If you want a really beautiful Google, you should look up how Xavier Thevenard does his like UTMB pit stops. He seriously rolls into the aid station, stretches out his arms, and like his girlfriend, wife, whatever, will like take out trash, put in new trash, new bottles. They like spray his sensitive areas down with lube, and then he is out. It takes like 28 seconds, and I've never seen anything like it. And I think that that is the aid station speed that we should all aim for, right? Like, it's not the time for like chit chat, you know, just try to be as efficient as possible. And I also think, like, as the runner, like, yes, you're asking people for help and like you're leaning on them, but any opportunity you can take to really be independent is a way to reassert autonomy to yourself and over the race, right? Like, if you get into an aid station, you sit down in a chair and you're eating pizza rolls while people change out your shoes, like, no, you're the boss. You're there to run 100 miles. Run that shit. You are there. Like, if you're acting helpless, you're going to run helpless. You need to like embody every element of being a boss in every part of this race, and that will help you feel more in control and feel more powerful. And that's a really important thing that I think that people, you know, like, your crew is going to want to help you and baby you. Like, don't let them, as much accept the help you need, but like, do be an adult about it and like retain a sense of agency and power over what's going on.
Yeah,
I think that's
having
really key.
Agency is super important. And I would say this extends to the kind of our last point in the last couple of minutes that we have. I just wanted to touch on when to utilize pacers. and who to maybe choose to be a pacer. I think pacers are best used towards the end of longer events, especially events that you are unfamiliar with or you haven't run before. I see pacers being particularly useful during overnight running portions of long races as well. Just having somebody there to talk to you when you're tired, to make sure that you're safe when you are running in the dark. This is something that athletes of all levels in all events use, from Leadville to Hard Rock, anywhere where they're basically allowed to be used, athletes from all levels are utilizing them because it's really helpful. There are a few things that I think are, you know, are important for pacers to know. One, be prepared and be fit enough to go the distance your athlete is asking you to go. You do not want to be the reason your athlete doesn't make a cutoff.
And if you have like any, if there's even 1% of you, just say no. And that's fine. And people will respect you for it. But like, if there's any even semblance of doubt, like, am I the right person for this? Just like the best thing you can do for your friend is say like, hey, I don't think I'm the right. And I've done this. Like, we've both done this. Like, people have asked us to pace or crew things. And if it's like, you know, if I'm coming off a big week at work and it like doesn't work for me, I let them know in advance that if it doesn't work into my training schedule, like I'm not going to derail my A race for, you know, other people. Like, I will do my best to help other people make the connections they need to get the support they need, but it's okay to turn races down, right? Like, setting boundaries is amazing. And you can always help them out later, right? But the best thing you can do for friends sometime is say no if for some reason you're not able to support them to the ability you would like to support them.
Yeah, I think that that's so, so important. Another thing that I think is just really important for pacers to understand is that you are sometimes going to be this like almost like a vessel for receiving a lot of mental and emotional distress that the athlete
you're gonna have. See some stuff.
Pacing is really challenging, almost more so mentally and emotionally than physically. If you're gonna pace somebody, make sure you tell your coach, because if I'm your coach, I'm going to give you a rest day the next day.
I taper people for
exactly.
Cause like typically it's for ultras, hard. Like, you're probably pacing for around 20 miles, which like, depending on where you're at in your training, not everyone is able to just bang out 20 miles. No problem in the context of normal training. I've tapered. Like, I was supposed to crew a friend this summer and I even tapered for it. It's, you know, it's not a reflection on who you are as an athlete, but yeah, you know, be prepared, taper, take it seriously. Show up for your friend in the way you would want them to show up for you.
Yeah, I agree. You know, something that pacers can do to really help their athlete get to the finish line is be motivating. Ask good questions. Remind your athlete, you know, when to eat. Ask them, when was the last time you had a sip of that water? You know, are you eating having electrolytes? Are you drinking electrolytes?
I'll actually say, when Drew was pacing me at Leadville, I thought something he did really, really amazingly is he took full control of my nutrition because I was struggling. And every 20 minutes, he just handed me a gel, whether I wanted it or not. And he was like, well, if you don't eat it, you have to hold it. And so I would just keep eating. And that was very, very motivating for me. And he was eating along with me. So it felt, you know, like less of a struggle. And he also was like super motivating, was telling me about his family and like was really, and like, I'm usually a pretty chatty person, but he really helped carry the conversation. And I felt like that was hugely motivating.
Yeah. Being able to have a conversation when the athlete needs a little bit of a distraction, especially, you know, as pacers, it's almost always going to be in the second half of a race or like the last third. That's when people are, you know, your athlete's going to be really fatigued. They're going to have been out there for a long time. They're probably going to be tractor beaming to the finish line a little bit. They're going to be pretty one track, you know, give me my nutrition, distract me. Like, anything is going to help at this point because I've been out here for so long. This is driving me a little bit crazy. Mm-hmm. Something, you know, I've been fortunate to be on a couple other crews other than Zoe's, and in kind of meetings with other athletes, it's important for crew and pacers to know when to disengage with the athlete too. Mm. Sometimes athletes in really tough situations can really internalize things. Although I would always recommend the athlete externalizes anything that they're feeling, utilize your pacer. Sorry, friends and loved ones. Like sometimes you're going to hear things that, you know, should only be understood in the context of the race and not, you know, what happens at the race, nowhere else. But try to get your athlete to externalize those things. If they're not having it, don't push them, because that mental and emotional element to the process out there, that can be really draining for the athlete. They're trying to hang on to as much energy as they have left, especially in these really long events. So knowing when to be quiet and to just hand them that gel every 20 minutes, or knowing when to ask questions, I think that those kind of things are super, super important. Motivation goes a long way. Distraction goes a long way, but sometimes just going out for a run and making it be just a run can be helpful too. Yeah. Zoe, did you have anything else you wanted to add? I feel like we kind of covered the race day discussion.
Yeah. I think, you know, one thing was, you know, when Kristen was pacing me, she was dressed ready to run, and the amount of running we did was minimal. So we both got cold. If your person is going to be hiking more than running, you know, dress a little warmer.
Yeah. Gosh, anticipating and the kind of those weather patterns, yeah, and those changes in the environment.
And really the fact that you may not be moving too through the environment in the way that you were maybe anticipating. But
yeah,
I think, you know, pacers can be such a powerful tool. Just pick people that know you well, right? Like when I pick my pacers, I'm like, who are the people that I've like shared the most miles with? And they're people that like have seen me at my best and at my worst, right? So they know that they can push me to be better, and I'm not gonna feel any kind of shame should I be at my worst. And I think that that's really important. Also, you know, I know some people are very pro, like use your partner as pacer and crew. I know a lot of people are like, depending on who you are as a person, maybe it's not the best idea to use your significant other as a pacer and or crew. Just kind of depends on you and the person.
Yeah. Absolutely. I would agree. There is definitely time to set boundaries with loved ones and be like, hey, maybe pacing isn't the best.
Yeah. Or like if your significant other isn't like totally into ultra running, like, you know what? That's totally cool. Like bring in one of your friends that is, and you know, maybe your significant other's like psyched, ready to learn. That's awesome. But you know, I think it can also be an opportunity to like, to either involve them if they want to, or to be like, you know what? Why don't you take the morning off with like, why don't you hang out with the kiddos? Why don't you, you know, control the stuff that you're good at controlling, and I'll use, you know, one of my running buddies to support me, just because, you know, like you want someone who like just, you know, knows stuff. Like you don't have to explain gels to, or if they see a thing of squirrel's nut butter, they're not going to lose their minds.
Totally. Yeah.
Or absolutely. What you do with squirrel's nut butter.
Well, cool. Thanks, guys. We will have this on YouTube for you guys to listen back to if you weren't able to take any notes. Hope you found this helpful. Each race, there's a question here. I'll address it really quickly. How many paces are needed for a 100-miler? There,
as many as are as allowed. Many
as are allowed, or
without overcomplicating it.
Well, also, you know, it's if your pacer can run 45 miles, you can use your pace. You know, you could use one pacer. So it really depends on how, you know, the level of the athletes that you enlist to help you and the rules of the specific race. So please, again, guys, you've got to know the rules and the course and the elevation profile and everything of your events. If you don't know these things, you're really missing like the foundation of just going out and committing to an event. So please look at that stuff. I can't say it enough. Know what you're getting into before you get into it. That's the first way to set yourself up for success and really just have a great time out there at these races. Well, cool. We'll see you all on Friday morning. And then we're going to be off next Monday because we're away, but we'll pick it back up again the following Friday. I hope you guys are finding the discussions helpful. And if you've got any questions for us, please, please, please email us. We'll love to see you on Friday.
You guys are awesome.
Yeah. Have a good night. See you guys. Thanks.